Next is our book segment, What We're Reading with Tammy Bobrowski.
When you read a book, it's on a level playing field. It's just you and the book entering your consciousness. But books are also out here in the world as a part of the kind of cultural environment.
That's New York Times bestselling author Jonathan Latham. He'll be talking to us about his new book, and we'll hear a couple reviews from our listener readers. It's What We're Reading. Jonathan Latham is the author of several novels. He is perhaps best known for his sci-fi novel, Fortress of Solitude, but he's also written several short story collections and critical works. And his new book takes a look back at these works. It includes essays on Latham's influences and heroes like Philip K. Dick, Thomas Berger, Rod Serling, and even Charles Dickens makes an appearance. Latham is a writer who loves books and reading, and this is especially evident in the essay that begins this collection, The Loneliest Book I've Read, and the essay that finishes it, called Books Are Sandwiches. This is a clever, insightful, and engaging collection on books and writers. Jonathan, your new book is called More Alive and Less Lonely on Books and Writers. It's a collection of essays that you've written over the past two decades. How do you look back on decades of writing and decide what goes into a book like this?
Well, it's hard. And the first thing to say about this book is that I completely shirked my responsibility. And instead, a wonderful young writer named Christopher Boucher, who's associated with Melville House, which is the publisher here, did the editorial selections for me, which was not just a luxury, but a really interesting, fun process. I dumped a giant hard drive full of all of my unpublished essays and reviews and introductions in Chris's lap, and he waded through it and made sense of it, sort of, you know, put the pieces together and then jolted it with electricity, like Frankenstein's monster, to make it get up and walk. Many of these pieces are, you know, they're among the earliest critical writing I ever did, and some of them, to me, read like they're written by a completely different writer. I just was amazed at how many pieces I barely even recognized. But Chris found a really great organizing principle, and so I think they're all speaking to one another, and they sort of, you know, they become, in a way, like a photo album of my development as a critic.
I noticed that you've got several essays in here that are on different authors and their works, and many of these are introductions to those authors' novels.
Right.
What is the purpose of an introduction? What are you trying to accomplish with them?
You know, that's a really valid question, because I think sometimes it's easy to think, you know, let's just have the book. And with the greatest books, they are their own passport. But authors introduce other people's novels most customarily when those books are either they've been out of print for a while and people are trying to create excitement about their rediscovery. I think most of the introductions I've written fall into that category. Obscure writings that, you know, you're sort of on the team with the publisher and with maybe some other critics who might become interested in trying to say, you know, blow a trumpet and say, this is great and it's overlooked and let's find it some readers again. The other form of introduction, and I've got fewer of those, but there's, for instance, the introduction on Charles Dickens, Dombey and Son, is that great and imperishable classics from the past often are fitted with introductions by younger writers, by living writers, in order to form a kind of bridge to the past and help everybody see some of what they have in common with contemporary literature and why they're still lastingly relevant. It's an opportunity to, in a way, play on the scholarly team, to be talking about books that are in the canon, but rather than leaving them on a high pedestal, you want to say, here's what I like about them, and here's why they're great reading for anyone, and still, and today.
I'm glad you mentioned that essay on Dickens, because I do want to talk about that. It's called The Greatest Animal Novelist of All Time. I'm probably like most people, where I've read a few of Dickens' novels, but I'm not really familiar with that one. But I read that essay and I enjoyed it, even though I wasn't really familiar with that plot. When you write a critical essay, do you expect that your audience is familiar with that work, or does that not really matter?
Well, it's great if you can make it work at several different levels. I mean, you know, with Dickens, one of the interesting things about him is that, I mean, there are a number of his books that you might be assigned in school, Tale of Two Cities or maybe Great Expectations. But he wrote a lot, and they're big, and there are lots of them that aren't as frequently read anymore. Dombey and Son is probably one of those, even though I think it's really masterful. But the idea of Dickens is so powerful, and the basic building blocks of his narrative are so familiar because they've saturated into culture so deeply that you can think about Dickens and the kinds of stories he tells and the kinds of characters he presents pretty capably. You know, I can rely on my reader just having this sort of, there's a certain native familiarity with the stuff that Dickens is about. If I'm writing about a really obscure writer, I can't assume that at all. You know, it might be that the difference between someone who's read that writer and someone who's never heard of them is an enormous gulf, and my introduction is going to try to find some way to cross that gulf.
The book starts out with the essay called The Loneliest Book I've Read, and I really related to the sentiment here that there was this book that you discovered early in childhood. It's Eric Burns' The Happy Valley. Can you explain how this is the loneliest book that you've read?
Eric Burns wrote a very strange, kind of psychedelic children's book in the vein of Alice in Wonderland or The Phantom Tollbooth about a child who falls into a strange land and meets bizarre creatures there. And it's called The Happy Valley. This is a book that I had as a kid, and I read it, and I've never seen a second copy. I don't know any other kids who read it. I've still never met other people who grew up with The Happy Valley as one of their favorite childhood books, or even knew it at all. But I really loved it. And the world that it took me to was one that was influential on my writing, and it was something I reread compulsively. I also loved the illustrations, and I fell in love with the look of the book. So it was a real enthralling object for me. And when I was asked to write about the loneliest book I'd ever read, that was the one that came to mind.
Does the popularity of a book change it somehow?
I think it does. I mean, I think just as we were talking about the way Dickens is meaningful to people, even if they've never read him, you know, or in your case, if they've read one or two of his books, he exists in cultural space in a way that's formidable and interesting and partly illuminated just by default. You know, you get a feeling about him from references that are made to his work. And this is true of other titanic figures, you know, Kafka or Virginia Woolf. Books that are secrets, books that are just handed from one person to another, or that you discover and you can't confirm what their value is to anyone else because there isn't a lot of writing about them or conversation about them, have a very different quality. I mean, when you read a book, it's on a level playing field. It's just you and the book entering your consciousness. But books are also out here in the world as part of the kind of cultural environment.
What are you reading right now?
Oh, well, I'm in the middle of a teaching semester, so I'm reading a lot of my own students' writing. Sort of dominates my reading time. But I did just pick up John Darnielle's second novel. It's called Universal Harvester, and it's got a very creepy plot hook where some people working at a video store begin to hear complaints from their customers that there are strange extra scenes that have been imposed into the videos that they're returning. So that's what's on my bedside table right now.
Author and critic Jonathan Latham's new book is called More Alive and Less Lonely and is available now from Melville House. You're listening to What We're Reading on Northern Community Radio. I'm Tammy Bobrowski. And now let's hear from our listener readers. Julie has tackled a powerful book of poetry titled Whereas by Layli Long Soldier and calls her a voice we have been listening for. Julie says Long Soldier employs an artful use of words, providing clear meaning to the poems. But many of the poems were uneasy to read because of the difficult realities in the lives of Native Americans and in Long Soldier's own life. Most notable of these was a poem called 38, a contemplation and commemoration of the 38 Dakota men who were executed in the Dakota War of 1862 in Minnesota. Long Soldier is a new and forceful voice in poetry. Next, we hear a review from Wendy Greenberg of Bemidji.
I just read Difficult Women, a book of short stories by Roxane Gay. This is an author to watch, such a compelling voice. These stories are easy to read, not because they're light, but because it's hard to stop. It's like reading someone's very well-written journal. More sexual content than I usually read, though it's not there to spice things up, but to show the whole life of these women, for better or worse. Many of Gay's stories deal with the darkness of assault or loss or betrayal and finding a way to go on with love and dignity. That's not to say there's no humor, such as the story about a black woman engineer who takes a job in Michigan's Upper Peninsula and absolutely everyone asks if she's from Detroit. She's not. A few of the stories are fantasies, such as the one about the glass wife and the one about the woman who attracts water. Though as I think about it, these are really more metaphor than fantasy. The glass woman's husband works as a stone thrower, after all. But all of the stories are raw and compelling and so well crafted. I will be looking to read more works by Roxane Gay.
Don't forget you can join our community of readers online. Head over to kaxe.org to find the link to our What We're Reading group, or email us at comments@kaxe.org.
What We're Reading is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.